This is Pure Decking, show number 380 for Thursday, February 20th, and I don't know, whatever the current year is. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and hoping we get another season of Venture Brothers soon. I'm Morps. Tonight, we have BSV.
Hello.
And we have Medvin.
I don't know about Venture Brothers, but season 2 of Altered Carbon comes out in 7 days.
Okay. And are you is here.
And I'm just hoping they reboot the Smurfs. I don't know, I can't get in on this.
Are you wanting to Smurfing? I can see you into Smurfing.
Yeah, Smurfing the way you think, Madman, the way I think, a little different, I think.
Yeah, one involves snuff. Anyways,
Yes, but which one?
I don't know. I haven't figured... When I figure that out...
We've solved the world's problems.
Anyways. So... fuck, I don't really have anything witty to open the show with or conversation ahead. Let's just get into it. First article is from The Register. Forcing us to get consent before selling browser histories violates our free speech, according to the United States ISPs. The U.S. state of Maine is violating internet broadband providers' free speech by forcing them to ask for their customers' permission to sell their browser history, according to a new lawsuit. The case was brought this month by four telco industry groups in response to a new state-level law aimed at providing Maine residents with privacy protections killed at the federal level by the FCC just days before they were due to take effect. ACA Connect, CTIA, NCTA, and U.S. Telecom are collectively suing Maine's Attorney General Aaron Frey and the Chair and Commissioners of Maine's Public Utilities Commission, claiming that the statute passed in June 2019 imposes unprecedented and unduly burdensome restrictions on ISPs and only ISPs protected speech. How so? Because it includes restrictions on how ISPs communicate with their own customers that are not remotely tailored to protecting consumer privacy. The lawsuit even explains that there is a proper way to protect consumer privacy, and that's the way the FCC does it, through technology-neutral uniform regulation, although that regulation is actually the lack of regulation. If you're still having a hard time understanding how this requires companies to get their customers' permission before they sell their personal data, or how it infringes, the lawsuit is more details. It, one, requires ISPs to secure opt-in consent from their customers before using information that is not sensitive in nature or even personally identifying. So they're claiming your browser history is not sensitive and is not personally identifying.
Mm-hmm.
Two.
I don't know. If you were to
then why are you selling it?
That's a very good argument.
Yeah, I've got nothing to add after BSV's comment.
And also, if it's freedom of speech, you're still selling it. Normally, freedom of speech is to protect the free exchange of speech, not selling.
Several hundred years of newspapers would argue with you on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Two, imposes an opt-out consent obligation on using data that are by definition not customer personal information. 3, limits ISPs from advertising or marketing non-communications-related services to their customers. And 4, prohibits ISPs from offering price discounts, rewards, or loyalty programs or other cost savings benefits in exchange for customers' consent to use their personal information. All of this results in an excessive burden on ISPs, they claim, especially because not everyone else had to do the same. The new statute includes no restrictions at all on the use, disclosure, or sale of customer personal information, whether sensitive or not, by the many other entities in the internet ecosystem or traditional brick and mortar retailers, the lawsuit complains. This is discrimination, they argue. Maine cannot discriminate against a subset of companies that collect and use consumer data by attempting to regulate just that subset and not others, especially given the absence of any legislative findings or other evidentiary support that would justify targeting ISPs alone. So,
all right, I see that argument. The law should apply to Facebook and Google as well, not just ISPs.
No, I don't entirely disagree with that either. This is why I thought it would be fun to open with, is because on the face of it, it sounds like a silly argument, but they do actually kind of make some points here. But at the same time, oh, by the way, your ISP is collecting everything you do and selling it, in case you didn't know. Let's see. We'll leave the idea that customers are suffering by not receiving marketing materials from companies that ISPs sell their data to alone for now and focus on the core issue that if Google and Facebook are allowed to sell their users' personal data, then ISPs feel they should be allowed to as well, which is a fair point, though profoundly depressing. When you look at what the statute actually does, it's clearly written in the user's own interests. It prevents companies from refusing to serve or to serve customers that do not agree to allow it to collect their personal data. It requires ISPs to take reasonable measures to protect that data. Those companies that are still allowed to use the data to market their own products, just not to sell it to others to sell theirs. But because ISPs successfully managed to get the FCC to kill off its own rules on similar protections, it argues that scrapping of rules is the legal precedent here. The state statute is preempted by federal law because it directly conflicts with and deliberately thwarts federal determinations about the proper way to protect consumer privacy, the lawsuit argues. So they're saying the federal government trumps state. Pretty sure that it's not supposed to be that way, but it might be that way.
The federal is just supposed to regulate between states. The states...
Yeah.
On laws, the federal government trumps them. But there's not that many laws the federal government's supposed to be able to make. So, they're technically correct, but I don't see how the federal government's allowed to regulate this.
Okay.
It is interstate commerce. Google's not necessarily in that state physically.
True, but it wouldn't be the first time that different regions have demanded various services do different things. You know,
yeah, because this isn't... That might be why they didn't target Google. The state might not be able to, but the ISPs are in the localities within the state. So they're only regulating the section of the internet that they can.
Well, I mean, you know, you got stuff like, the social networks are behaving differently in, like, the EU, where some blocked it and some, you know, set up different protections to meet compliance with... not Glibba, what is it? The European thing saying they have to delete your data, if you ask nicely. Shit, I should know that. It's gone. GDPR, thank you, Cykros. Yeah, you have seen websites acting differently to address GDPR. Sometimes they just do it for everybody, and sometimes they're doing it by region, so... I mean, saying that the states have different requirements is not terribly out of bounds. But I think you'd have a problem with enforcement if Maine tried to say Google had to behave differently for citizens of Maine. So I'm not saying they couldn't try. I'm just saying I think they'd have a hard time, you know, forcing the issue. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact that it's a free speech argument is interesting because I kind of see where they're coming from, and that it's like, well, no, you're regulating what we do with information. but you know, the argument is that it's not really your information, it's your customer's information. But at the same time, it's never really stopped businesses before.
Your customer's information? We stuck it on their network. Now, granted, their business is me putting the information on their network.
Well, but you also may not fully understand the consequences of doing so. If they don't, you know, it's like that ISP was talking about earlier before we started the show that, you know, it's basically free, but you have to agree to not use a VPN, not obscure your data, and let them collect every little thing about you. And
no, that's a business transaction. I'd
it
be
is
fine
a business
that.
Transaction.
It is,
and it sounds like they
see any
do they make it clear?
It. A lot of it is in fine print, Madman. They don't make it clear up front what they're doing. That's the only reason I was talking about it. Is, you know, the deceptive practices is what I'd call it.
Well, see, that's my point. Is like, if the ISP is up front that we're going to collect your data and this is going to be a marketing point and we'll give you a $15 a month discount for letting us do this, I mean,
I might be persuaded.
Yeah, I could see people doing that, especially whenever we have Static on, he's always like, well, fuck, I don't care. Let him monitor what I do. So, you know, I mean, there are people who just don't care and would just take the discount.
Yeah. I just like them to be up front. That's all.
Yeah. Of course, having choice, you know, being able to pick different ISPs would be nice, too. You know the grand selection I have of one. So if the ISP I'm using is deciding to do this shit, then I basically am kind of SOL, right? So,
yeah.
You know, if you had proper competition in the marketplace and some doing this and some not, then you'd have an interesting case study on your hands there. So, I don't know.
Just people being up front, that would be better.
Yeah.
They would just assume they're selling our stuff. Right.
Well,
but God knows what are they going to get? Like fucking anime, movies, cat pictures, and porn. Whoop-de-fucking-do.
That's not what they're doing. What they're doing is they are building a profile for customer number whatever, because they say it's not personally identifiable, right? So, you know, what they'll say is we have a certain percentage of customers who like X, Y, and Z because through monitoring their data, we have determined that this tag applies. Maybe the tag's a political party. Maybe it's a common interest. You know, maybe it's a personal insult. I don't know. But they then bundle all that up, and then they go to various marketing companies and say, we have X number of people in this interest, and X number of people in this interest, so you should market this and this in these areas.
Yeah, I don't see how it worked for grabbing my shit. There's nothing you could use to advertise for me.
Do you ever shop for auto parts online?
Nope.
Well, then for you, it wouldn't be much. Nope. On me, they would say, this guy likes buying role-playing things, video games, and plus-size clothing. Market this to him. Here are his political beliefs, because I watch documentaries, seminars, and lectures online. So here are the magazines he'd be interested in. And if you're attempting to collect money for a political organization, this organization could go here, and that organization could go there. Don't waste your time attempting to solicit money from these guys, because they either don't believe what you believe or simply do not donate to a political organization.
Did I tell you that I somehow got on the wrong political list?
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I haven't done anything with it, but I've gotten a couple of texts from them now trying to get me to donate money to Elizabeth Warren. It's like, you really don't know my politics if that's what you're doing. It's like, I seriously thought about responding. Like, if I say MAGA, will you leave me alone? It's like, it's less about my political beliefs and more about the fact that you're making my phone make more noise than it already does. That's the real problem here. But yeah, so I guess people, you know, a lot of people don't even understand that that's what's really going on with these companies, is that they're trying to build a profile based off usually tags. You know, they're trying to categorize people and then turn around and sell those categories to marketers.
Please tell me you know about Mage of the Ascension, Zykros. And if so, are you NWO or Generation X? If you're neither of those, then you don't really matter anymore.
Take your nerd shit and do it elsewhere, man. All right, we're doing a show. All right.
He said he's a technocrat.
Technocrat? He's got...
All right.
Theocrat, all right. Not technocrat.
I'm sorry.
Madman, if anybody in this online conversation is a technocrat...
It'd be you, I know. Variation is evil.
Oh, God. Anyways. But, yeah, that's what they're really doing, is building out these profiles. And then one way or another, selling these profiles to other companies for marketing or whatever. And the theory is that customers would like it, because then you're going to market things they're interested in to them and not bother them with things they don't care about. Of course, that doesn't usually work out that way, because like I was just saying with the politics thing, I would rather you just not bother me at all. You know, my phone already goes off about 100 times a day, give or take, you know, and only about half of that are scam phone calls. But, you know, so you're just adding more noise to my life that I really don't care about, you know, at all. So, but... I don't know. I guess I could see some people valuing that service of, you know, not getting bothered with things that they don't think they're interested in. And I guess if you let them, you know, if you participate in all the Facebook polls and do all the stuff so they build a super accurate profile of you, it probably would be that way. You probably would only see ads you're interested in. You probably wouldn't get bothered by the wrong political party, for example. But
it's not only ads that you're interested in. They have good enough analytics. If you're super honest with them, it's things you're interested in that you didn't know existed.
Which could be a good thing. You might want to know about that. But at the same time, you know, at some point, advertising stopped being informing you about things you might be interested in participating or purchasing in, and started trying to become manipulation. And... you know, a lot of people like to think they're resistant to manipulation, but I do phishing training at work on a regular basis. Believe me, people are not resistant to manipulation.
Yeah.
I see people click for malware. Go ahead, BSV. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I just wish they would stop advertising to me the thing I just bought 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, that one gets a little old. And, of course, at work, where my machine is managed and we don't have as many good, you know, I don't have the three different ad blocks and no script and all that stuff I usually run. So, you know, I'm sitting there trying to research various tools and things for work. I start getting advertising for all the security companies. And somehow I've gotten on all the marketing lists, so I probably get 2 or 3 phone calls a week at least, cold calls from various security companies wanting to, you know, set up a meeting or take you to lunch or whatever. And I am sure if I let them, I could probably eat for free at least twice a week on a marketer's dime. It's such a waste of time. I don't care. I don't want to bother with them. I don't want them calling me, you know, once a month because I let them take me out to lunch. I don't want to get the email from them once a week wanting to know if we're going, what are your next steps? What can we do to move this forward? You know, anybody who's ever dealt with this shit, it gets so old so
blue
fast.
Blue-balling your marketing people.
Dude, you know,
I think
it
I
does.
Can eat on the free money, man. You know, just blue-ball them all the time. Yeah, I'm totally going to read it in my security. No, I get it, man.
It's just, I mean, you know, you do a couple, sure, because it's kind of fun. And then after that, they start, you're literally getting phone calls from them once a week wanting to know, what can we do to move this forward? What can we do to get this interested? And it's like, yeah, you know what? Actually, my management wasn't terribly interested. And they just, oh my God, they just harass you to no end. And so I found it's better just to cut them off at the knees. It's just like, yeah, we have a policy of not doing business with cold calls. They usually hang up on you right away for that one. You got to be careful about saying that, though, because especially most companies that don't actually have that policy. So, moving this forward involves you moving your knees to the Psychros. You're not as wrong as you think. There are some salespeople who absolutely do that. They are if that's what it took to sell you that $500,000 contract, they absolutely would. I can tell because those are the kind of girls they send on their marketing junkets. So it's like, this
I'd be abusing
so
that.
So unethical.
I would be abusing that.
Unfortunately, I'm always in the position just a touch too low to be making those decisions, so it's not me getting the benefit. But
one day we do make
the joke at work. Whenever some random ass piece of software or random ass service shows up that we're not going to be using for something, and nobody knows where it came from or why we did that and why we didn't do a proof of concept or any of that, yeah, those are called BJ deals because. Somebody got a BJ. It's not always the person, you know, who bought it who got the BJ. Sometimes it's the other way around because they're hoping to get a job with the company selling it. We've seen that one happen a couple of times too, actually. Somebody goes to a huge song and dance to get a company brought in. About 2 months after they finally get that contract signed, that person's turning in their 2 weeks' notice. About three weeks after that, you see on LinkedIn that they're working for that company. Uh-huh. Corporate marketing is dirty, dirty business.
Sounds elected.
Damn morals. Why did my parents have to raise me in morals? You know how much fun I could be having right now? Anyways. Is this dead? We ready to move on?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Next article. This is from the BBC, and I believe Aru sent me this one. Aru, you sent me most of the articles today. Should make a note of that. Red car cyber attack. Council using pen and paper. More than 135,000 UK residents have been without online public services for nearly a week. As their council struggles with a cyber attack, Redcar and Cleveland Borough's council's website and all computers at the authority were attacked on Saturday. One cybersecurity expert told the BBC the incident had all the hallmarks of a ransomware attack in which files are scrambled until a ransom is paid. But the council refused to confirm the nature of the hack. Online appointment bookings, planning documents, social care advice, and council housing complaint systems are just some of the services knocked offline. The National Crime Agency said it was supporting the council. A team of experts from UK's National Cybersecurity Center have been on site since the cyber attack, which took place at 11 a.m. on a Saturday. The NCSC said, "We are aware of a cyber incident affecting Redcar and Cleveland Borough Council. This is an isolated incident. We are supporting the organization and working with partners to understand the impact." The leader of the council, Councillor Mary Langland, told the BBC computers have been taken offline and systems are being rebuilt. "We have a massive team here, including cybersecurity experts working round the clock to get it fixed. They have to go through IT systems bit by bit to make sure everything is clean. A lot of our staff are not able to work without computers, but they are coping quite well here. The main problem is that we have no email systems, so we have had extra phone lines for residents. They've opened up new phone numbers. Their system is so fried, they're opening up new phone lines. The website for council tax payments is still open, and the council says frontline services are continuing with staff using pen and paper. And this is my favorite part. The council says it is updating taxpayers using Facebook and Twitter.
Oh.
With tax information?
Uh-huh.
Oh, how do you make a problem make it worse?
Facebook now knows your tax information, meaning they know what income bracket to put you in.
Sir, the entire computer system's down with ransomware. All right, just fucking wipe everything and go with yesterday's backups. Yeah, we fired the guy who was doing backups to save the money. Well, who's doing the backups? Oh, we just haven't done any for how long? That's essentially it. Where are the backups?
A year and a half is the usual answer to that one.
Wait.
Don't ask me how I know that.
this shouldn't be a 2020 problem. You know what I mean?
No.
This has happened over the last 5 years that as a counselor in charge of records or whatever, the minute you heard about the first council getting pwned, wouldn't you put a defense program into play? Like, hey, so-and-so got pwned. Yeah, maybe we need to look at a way that if we get pwned, we can get back up and running. Because this is what? Third council that has to go back to? No, the second council and one municipality, as in America.
You would think.
Had to go to pen and paper.
You would think. But here's the thing. And I've been on both sides of this conversation. So, you would think any modern organization would be doing regular snapshots and running everything virtualized at a minimum so that they could, if nothing else, like you said, blow the system out, grab the snap from yesterday, and be back up and running, and it most have lost a day.
Yeah.
You would think that. But that's not the case because setting up systems like that has, on the bottom line, almost zero benefit as far as making more money, especially for companies. Now, city councils, maybe we can make an argument. But it's purely a defensive cost. They see security as a cost center. So what ends up happening is, after an incident like this, budget gets allocated. Projects get spun up. People get brought in. And about 6 weeks in, somebody says, I don't think we really need to be spending all this money on that. And I really, really need some of this budget for my project over here. So they go upstairs, they give the person in charge of BJ, and then they get that some of that budget cut over to their project. And then you get some other teams in charge who start coming at that pie. Same thing happens with integration budgets, by the way. Anybody who's ever worked in the corporate world knows this, where everybody finds a way to sneak in and grab a piece of that budget. And by the time you're actually trying to do the security implementation, you're looking at open source software and seeing who will work for free on the weekends because you've got no budget left and everyone's taking it. And I have seen organizations bring in, big consultant firm, right? Huge consultancies. Spend $100,000 on that consultancy to come in for 2 weeks and tell them what all they need. And that's it. After they're done, they don't do any of the recommendations. They don't fix anything. But they tell everyone, we brought in this consultant. We solved the problem.
They said the same thing as the guy you shove in the closet labeled IT.
And BSV is correct. You spend the money on the consultants, they come in, they drop a nice shiny report on your desk. What do? You take that report, you make sure it's stapled neatly, you walk over, you pull open the filing cabinet, you put it in the filing cabinet, you close it, and you say, we've solved the problem.
Yep, risk assessment done.
It's like...
Don't implement any of the procedures?
Nope. Not a damn thing.
Cost
money.
They
didn't buy a system. They didn't hire anybody. They got a nice shiny report that they can go up to the board and say, "See, look, we addressed the problem. Here's the report. We need $100 million to fix the problem." And the board goes, "We're not spending that money." And they say, well, we had the consultant come in, so we don't need to do anything else. Because that's it. And I'm sure it happens with other areas too. But it's just the most asinine shit where they bring in a consultant, they get the answers, and when it doesn't get fixed and it happens again, they bring in the consultant again, and the consultant basically writes the same damn report they wrote 2 years ago the first time it happens, and they didn't fix a damn thing. And it gets to the point where you start arguing that, hey, we should probably at least change consultancies, because this one's just giving us the same report we've gotten 3 years in a row with the year changed. You know? And yeah,
that's what they like.
And it says they're paying us for this. Ha 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 ha. Did you read this report at all?
Oh, yes, yes, we read it out. We very finely studied the report. We made PowerPoint presentations about the report. We took that report up to the board. And the board killed it.
Yep. That's it.
And that's it. Nobody ever wants to actually fund doing the security work. So shit like this keeps happening.
Which is cool as a situation 22.
So when did people stop understanding the whole cause and effect?
When organizations get to a certain level of complexity, the people making decisions are so far removed from the people impacted by those decisions that they're able to convince themselves that anything they do is correct. And then when shit like this happens, rather than going, oh, we made a wrong decision 2 years ago when we chose not to fund the security program, they instead say, what the fuck? We got that report. Why are our IT people idiots? Fire those guys.
And another thing to look at, BSV, you're thinking, how do we keep our customers and our employees safe? A company may think it takes a budget of $500,000 to do that a year. What are the odds of us getting popped in that year? What are the liability odds of us being sued and found liable if we are popped? So there's more calculations than just what should we do and what can we do. It does come down to a bit to cost. A lot of times it's cheaper to do nothing.
So... Part of the problem, there's another part of the problem, and that's that a lot of security people try to use a fear tactic to sell security. If we don't do this, we'll get hacked. Well, if you don't get hacked in the next 6 months after you say we'll get hacked, everyone forgets that you said we'll get hacked, or they think you're crying wolf, right? So most security people, you know, they swoop in after an event like this happens. It's like, see. But again, it doesn't happen. I have literally had arguments with sysadmins who didn't want to patch their Windows boxes because they said that we've never had a Windows box get hacked. It's like, yeah, but how many other people have? It's like, how often do you have to, but...
Let's just say this as simple as it can be. They're viewing it as, we don't need seatbelts or airbags because we don't plan on being in a car crash.
That's correct. That is the logic. In fact...
I don't need airbags because I'm going to die like a man.
In fact, BSV, the same sysadmin I got in an argument with who was arguing that our Windows boxes had never been hacked, when I tried to explain to him, it's like, you know, the world has changed from 1990. We don't get to play that game anymore. He literally went to an argument about Jesus to justify not securing his systems.
Wait, what? Yeah. Jesus take the keyboard?
Yeah, basically. And it's just like, and because the manager was also very, very real. And you all know that I am not a religious, right? You all know that I occasionally go to church too. But I'm sitting there going, what? And then because his manager was also a very religious person, was going, oh, yeah, no, that makes total sense. It's like, no, it doesn't. He just said we were having a serious technical conversation, and he answered it with, but what about my Jesus? And that won the argument with that manager. It's like, It's like, that's when not an they... argument.
When I know did... the Lord can save, but he doesn't back up. What the, you know?
I like that, are you?
That would have been my argument for that one, man. Yeah. Yes, oh. Jesus can save, but man, he's shit on backups.
Right. I mean, it was insane. So, and then what will happen is when there is a security incident, that same type of person will turn around and say, well, why'd you let this happen, Mr. Security Person?
Because you trusted in Jesus to protect your computer.
And you'll get fired for that. And it's like, I tried to prevent this. You wouldn't let me. Well, you didn't make me understand the seriousness of the argument. You got to understand, the people in charge are never, you know, at fault. If they can help it.
So, next time the people in charge say Jesus would take the keyboard, can you get that in writing?
Of course not. I've tried. They'll never put it in writing, but, you know, it's like, okay, can I get an email saying that? Oh, yeah, yeah, we'll send you an email. You're never going to see that email. So,
which is the Lord's operating system? I'm having to think it's Temple OS. And if you're not running Temple OS, then Jesus will not save.
That's pretty good. Oh, I wish that guy still worked here so I could make that argument.
That'll just offend him.
So
anyway,
yeah, moving on. This is, I mean, it's the same argument, but here's another one R you sent me, and it's just awesome. I love this article so much. It's from Business Insider. And, yeah, I mean, there, damn it. Making a note. Okay. Hackers stuck a 2-inch strip of tape on a 35-mile-per-hour speed sign and successfully tricked two Teslas into accelerating to 85 miles an hour.
Awesome.
Did they go back in time? No, that's 88. That's 88.
Researchers at McAfee were able to trick two Teslas into autonomously speeding up by 50 miles an hour. The researchers stuck a 2-inch strip of tape to a 35-mile-per-hour sign, and the car's system misread it as 85 miles per hour and adjusted the speed accordingly.
Not even mad.
I understand reading the signs, but I've seen so many signs driving through bad areas that are either smashed up, shot up, rusted away.
Well, I mean, hell, they're covered in band stickers around a college, so I mean...
The Teslas aren't made for poor people who live in flyover areas. God, filthy man to even think that.
I'm sorry, I'll keep my flyover food to myself. You can live on your coast.
That's it, BSV. Poor people don't buy Teslas.
There's kind of generic rules for speed. Those can't just be programmed into the Tesla. I guess it wouldn't know whether it's on a limited access highway, a rural highway, or a road, would it?
Well, I always assumed it was getting the speed limit from GPS.
That's what I thought.
At least a check with GPS.
Yeah, because at least in my state, there are statutes regulating speed. Like a limited access highway, it can be like 70 miles an hour. A rural highway is 45 to 50. A city street is 35. Parking lot is 15, I think. And of course, signs trump the law. So if it's posted something different, then you go sign.
Yeah.
So,
but you don't actually need a sign to know what the speed limit is, because it's in our driving manual.
So here's the thing. They didn't put it where you'd think they'd put it. The McAfee researchers, Steve Filoni and Shivagan Trivedi, stuck 2 inches of black tape on a 35-mile-per-hour speed sign, slightly elongating the middle line in the three.
What?
They take the three... and where
and they
goes
make it longer.
In, and they just made the middle longer.
They didn't connect it to make it an 8?
No. Yeah. It confused the system. It's image recognition. It failed to match the list of images it's been programmed with. And
yeah, the closest match was an 85 instead of a 35.
Yeah.
They then drove a 2016 Tesla Model X towards the sign with cruise control. Cruise control is self-driving. As the car approached the altered sign, it misread it as 85 and started to accelerate by 50 miles per hour. Same thing happened with the Model S. They even have a picture of it here where they've just elongated the middle of the 3 to be about as far out as the edges of the 3. So it's pretty easy to see why the computer picked that up as an 8. But any human would look at that and go, that's just a fucked up 3. Because an 8's just the closest match. And they go on there talking about some of the other problems that have happened with the Tesla auto driver and like an Apple engineer who died in the crash because the thing was on autopilot. But
I don't think Tesla of having to do the same standards as other vehicles.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. With given
the, that class is a major fault. I don't care what anyone says. That's a major fault. It's like a stuck throttle.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't trust a Tesla vehicle. Any car that you can't work on yourself is not worth owning.
Which is why you still have to have a driver in a driverless car.
Well, there's no point in the car driving around empty, madman. Makes no fucking sense when you really think about it. Where's the car? I don't know. It went out for a drive by itself. Fucking autonomous vehicles.
It'd be like that, their own. In the original Total Recall, the robot taxi driver. It'll be It'll be an inflatable driver to fool the cops. Or the blow up pilot from Airplane.
Yeah, that was what I want. To blow it up the traffic lights, just to freak people out. A lot of work.
Everyone loves the Jolly Cab.
But that's going to be a real problem with people vandalizing the signs and shit if more and more people are doing these self-driving cars.
I mean, it should be hooked to GPS.
So
I'm waiting for all cars to require an internet service before they'll activate.
We've done so many stories on decking about these cars that like check and make sure they're paid for before they'll start, shit like that.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's only a matter of time.
Oh, the price of used cars and parts will skyrocket.
They will.
Well, I mean, fuck, we did the article a couple of weeks ago about Tesla turning off features because they decided somebody hadn't paid for them because they bought the car secondhand.
Yeah, they're assholes.
It's like, oh, yeah, we can turn that back on.
They got so much for features that
somebody bought a used Tesla at auction. It was one of those, the person who bought it couldn't afford it, so it was repoed. And then they took it to auction kind of things.
Yep.
And they decided that the car shouldn't have had autopilot enabled. Like, apparently the first person to buy the car didn't buy the feature for a self-driving car and something else. And but it was enabled anyways. And when the auction site got it, of course, they checked it out and said, oh, this has got the self-driving feature. So when they sold it as having that feature. And when the guy got the car, of course, Tesla had turned that off because they quote unquote did an audit and discovered the feature was enabled erroneously. And he contacts Tesla and they're like, yeah, no, you didn't pay for that feature, but you can have it enabled if you're willing to pay the $8,000 for it.
No,
and it's a software
Tesla
feature.
Terrible.
It's a software feature. Like, it's literally somebody hitting a button enabling it, right?
Yep. We see you didn't pay for the feature of brakes. We're disabling that for now.
But there was so much backlash, they eventually re-enabled it because the guy is like, well, he bought it thinking it had that. And there was obviously a miscommunication with the auction company. So we'll just re-enable, you know. In other words, you guys got so much bad press, you went ahead and gave it to the guy.
Good.
I wouldn't trust that auto drive. The autopilot.
The fact that you can turn it on and off worries me as well.
Oh, factory that means setting. Anyone can turn it on and off.
Yep.
Well, the fact that the car is checking in often enough for them to decide we've disabled this. You know, Tesla has decided it's time for you to buy a new vehicle. We've disabled your old one. Have a nice day. You know.
Yeah. Or you get in it, man, suddenly the battery's a half-life because they've got a built-in fail after 8 years or something.
I could see it.
No, that's a safety feature.
Are you, if they had their way, they'd probably make the cars break down in 2 years. That seems like the normal cycle they'd try to get people on.
Are we being genuine?
Generous.
That's the one.
I could totally see them doing that. It's like, I'm sorry, your purchase has expired. Please bring your vehicle back in and exchange it for a new one at a new loan. And then this they take the old one, just re-enable it and sell it to somebody else.
The safety feature, you know, for the children and the environment.
The environment, my ass. Look at the chemicals required to build the battery for one of those electric cars and then tell me it's still an environmentally friendly car.
How dare you?
Just like that. Just did. You just saw it.
What? Just like those energy-saving light bulbs that, if they break, you have to classify the area as a hazardous cleanup site?
That one always blew my mind. It's like, everyone switched to compact fluorescence. Why? LEDs existed. It's like LEDs are better, actually more efficient, and will last just as long. Well, we haven't figured out how to get those to burn out after 2 years, so go for the compact fluorescence.
My theory of the compact fluorescence is they just had a bunch of waste they wanted to get rid of, and they figured they'd just put in the lights.
Well, they apparently that's, you know, some people say that about the fluoride in the water, so I mean, you know. Anyways,
the aglets, their true purpose is sinister.
Tauntauns, Mr. President.
All right. Let's move on to this next one. Also sent to me by RU, because apparently he's playing the part of the major now.
I just had a lot of time on my hands this week in between working.
I'm glad you did, because I didn't. So,
you were sick.
Yeah, still got a touch of it. Israeli soldiers duped by Hamas fake women phone ruse. Dozens of Israeli soldiers have had their smartphones hacked by the Hamas militant group posing as women seeking attention. Literally a honeypot.
Thirsty Jews.
Damn it.
What?
It was just funny, that's all.
There's nothing offensive about that. They're thirsty guys that happen to be Jews in the army.
Cycross says he sent me a couple of articles. I only saw the one, although I haven't looked at my thing lately. So, yeah, he sent me one that was his thing either. That's you know, good. We don't want to scare anybody, but yeah, the one you sent me was like more of an IGN story than anything, dude. But if you sent me more, I just haven't seen them yet. Anyways, let's see. A spokesman said the soldiers were sent fake photos of young females and lured into downloading an app without knowing it could access their handsets. He said there was no significant breach of information before the scam was foiled. Hamas, which controls Gaza, and Israel view each other as mortal enemies. Understatement of the century right there.
Yeah, and how?
It is the third such attempt in recent years by Hamas to infiltrate Israeli soldiers' phones, but it was the most sophisticated yet, according to Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Kornkus. We see that they're, of course, learning and upping their game, he said. Colonel Corcoran said the hackers had masqueraded as young women with imperfect Hebrew, claiming to be immigrants or have visual or hearing impairments in order to appear convincing. So, social engineering 101. After striking up friendships, the women would send links, which they said would enable them to exchange photos, but in reality calls the soldiers to download malware, programs that can attack smartphones or computers. Once the link was opened, the program would install a virus, which would give the hacker access to the phone's data, including location, pictures, and contacts. You could also remotely manipulate the phone, used to take photos and recordings with the owner's knowledge. Actually, in a military situation, if you had enough people's phones hacked, that could be a problem. Like, if you've got enough of their locations, like, you might actually be able to figure out, like, where they're going because you have X number of people in an area.
We just need to throw off the enemy. Quick, soldiers, throw all of your phones in this little red wagon.
What?
Yeah, get out of my head, madman. That's what
wasn't
I was thinking,
there a
too.
Problem with that with Pokemon Go and other phone things like that.
Oh, no, there were people invading military bases trying to get Pokemon.
Well, there are also people setting up things for the game in military bases that weren't supposed to be known.
Yeah, gyms. They could train their Pokemon at work.
Oh, and they were doing it in top secret base? That's funny.
Ones in conflict that... Yeah.
Colonel Corker said the Israeli Defense Forces had uncovered the plot several months ago, but had let it continue under surveillance until they shut it down. The IDF has previously warned soldiers about the need for vigilance when using smartphones and issued guidelines to try to prevent hacking attempts. Israel and Hamas are in a permanent state of conflict. Oh, well, that's a permanent conflict. That's a little depressing.
Another understatement there.
Yep. Both are engaged in intelligence gathering against one another as hostilities. Yeah, okay. So, just no chance of it ever being resolved. It's permanent conflict, man.
Well, it may resolve one day. It's just only one side will be left.
That they will have peace and quiet.
Hell, for $29.95, you can help bring peace to the Middle East. We're building a nuclear weapon. That came out wrong.
Click here to download the app.
Exactly.
Hey, guys, contribute to my GoFundMe. We're wanting to buy some arms from Russia to take down to Gaza and solve the problem.
Hey, I didn't say which side of the problem I was gonna solve with my. I'll just stop there before I commit a bigger hate crime than I've already committed. The ADL is coming for us now, boys. In the boat.
Gaza's contested, isn't it?
I don't know at this point, dude.
It depends on what borders you're looking at.
I thought that whole thing was kind of a big gray area.
If you look at the new U.S. peace plan proposal, all the settlements that are currently Israeli are Israeli. And the longer Hamas takes to sit down at the table and negotiate,
Madman, you know, the less I haven't land. Looked at that.
Yeah, the less land they have.
Yeah, I just stay out of that whole thing because no matter what you say, you're fucking wrong.
But yeah, if you go back to the 64 borders were the last official ones UN recognized. Yeah, it's all fucked up.
let's not dive into that. Let's move on to the next Captain Obvious story here we have. I suppose we could do that. We could start categorizing stories. This one would be in the no shit Sherlock category. Oh, go ahead, my man.
I just like the last one was, effectively, I will send you pics of boob and vagin. You can be your troop movements.
Boob and vagin.
You know that's going to work.
Are these kosher boob and vagin?
Tauntauns, Mr. President.
Exactly.
This next one is from Vice. Hackers are using the coronavirus panic to spread malware. Hackers are posing as the CDC and public health officials to get people to open virus-laden files. Why do people trust email?
Who would send me email that isn't supposed to send me email?
Just like the TV never tells lies, emails are always good.
Only legitimate people have my email address. Not like it's posted anywhere, or that I give it to anyone, or websites require it as a login.
Hackers are using the public sphere of the coronavirus to steal passwords and spread malware, according to multiple cybersecurity firms and computer security experts. The setup is usually simple. A malicious actor sends a mark, an email, or message that appears to come from an official government source, such as the Centers for Disease Control, and gets the mark to click a link that asks for personal info. It's an old scam updated to prey on people's coronavirus fears. The most prominent coronavirus-themed campaign targeted Japan, distributing emotet in malicious email attachments feigning to be sent by the Japanese Disability Welfare Service provider. Damn.
Does this mean the coronavirus has gotten online then?
Yep.
Sure, why not?
It's digital now.
Oh, you get it from Batman cartoons online.
Wait.
What?
Supposed to exactly. Come from bats when you eat it in reality. Batman cartoons online.
Any movies? Testicular cancer.
There you go, Madman.
I don't see why you're dragging me into that one.
Because I hit the wrong damn button. I actually meant to hit this one.
Welcome to the rice fields.
There we go. Now, the most prominent... Okay, I already read that. California-based cybersecurity company Checkpoint said in a report, the emails appear to be reporting where the infection is spreading in several Japanese cities, encouraging the victim to open the document, which, if opened, attempts to download Emotet on their computer. Emotet is a Trojan malware program that, once installed, sits on the victim's computer, gathers personal information. Not every coronavirus-themed malware requires the user to install software. Many of them are simple phishing attempts with a coronavirus theme. You know, it's like a WordPress theme, only, you know, with light beer and a virus. Yeah, that joke's been played out to death, hasn't it? Anyways, let's see. And a typical example described in TrustWave's SpiderLab blog, a strange email address or email address pretending to come from the CDC will reach out to a victim, telling them a city near them has reported a coronavirus outbreak.
Smoke weed every day.
That is not the right button. I was messing with the soundboard earlier, and it's there's a lot of off by one errors. That's not it either. Where's the?
That's it, man. That's game it. Game over, man. It's game over.
I can't find BSV's theme. I'm sorry.
Nah.
Where?
Delicious.
My theme is gone.
It's gone. I can't find
Why
it.
Why am I a monster?
Finally. I've hit every damn button on the board trying to find that. Just wanted to get for screwing with it. Let's see. Yeah, the link appears to be legitimate, but redirects to a phishing site that replicates a Windows login and asks the users for their email and password. I bet it's that same one that has just, like, the logos of a bunch of different email accounts on it, and it says punch in your username and password. Like, I don't know if any of you have seen this one. It's hilarious, but it's, like, always that one, where it's just a simple form page with a username and password box on it, and they've got Gmail, Yahoo, Office 365,
Oh, click on
Zoho.
The one relevant to you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I've any of them. It's like any of these will work here. And
yeah, I've seen that.
It's the dumbest thing because that's all it is like a blank page with all these logos in the login box. And these things collect thousands of email addresses because people are dumb. Yeah, here we go. The CDC isn't going to email you a press release about the coronavirus spreading in your state or county. The World Health Organization won't send you an email with attached documentation explaining what you should do to help stop the spread of the coronavirus. If you receive an email like this, treat it skeptically. Look at the email address it comes from, check the grammar and spelling of the email, and if something looks off, report it as spam. Computer criminals follow trends.
You could ask yourself how the CDC got your fucking email to start with.
Yeah, there's nothing else to cover on this. It's just dumb. Huh. People are dumb. You're right. Why would the CDC be emailing me directly?
Exactly.
It's like
I follow this shit really closely, and I know I'm not going to get one email from them, and I'm right up on it.
It's like back in the day of AOL, where people would get emails saying, oh, look, it says if I log in. It's like, no, the scammer saw your username in a chat room, dumbass.
Yeah.
What, the CDC isn't contacting me because of all the hours I put into Plague Inc.?
Well, okay, that's a different problem, BSV. I mean, most people, they're not contacting because of all the hours they put into Plague Inc. In your case, they're wanting to conduct a study.
Yeah.
The fact that you set up one of those Chinese click farming things to play Plague Inc., I mean, it's impressive. I liked it. The fact that you managed to fit multiple different tablets in there and they all work, I mean, it's cool. It's a work of art, but it's disturbing.
Yeah, one person's pet project is another person's horrible nightmare.
I mean, you know, it's like Madman's Tower of Unused Furniture. I mean, we just, it's impressive, but I don't want to go anywhere near it.
God knows what's going to happen when it catches on fire.
There'll be hairballs and cats running everywhere.
I'm just waiting for the fall sale.
All right. Next article up, and this one was also sent to me by RU. Okay. And is this my last article? No. Okay, I've got one more after this. Austin man sets up live stream of alley behind the apartment as social experiment. At least it's not Florida, man. Austin, Texas. An Austin man has set up a live stream of the alley behind his East 6th Street apartment. The alley is full of people who are homeless and drug dealers who prey upon them. It's a half a block from where tens of thousands of people are coming to party every weekend, and nobody ever sees this side of it. So I just thought people needed to see this. Stream founder Keegan Godsey. Users can pay to play audio in the alley. Now that just there is genius. Some of the clips are lighthearted, others are not. Drugs, sex, and racial slurs were all mentioned when a Fox 7 Austin team listened. Gotzi has set up the stream for 5 days and has already received 6 citations from Austin police. Police say it's a noise ordinance violation. Within those citations, the officer alleges that this is a hate crime. Gotzi, who plans on fighting the citation, says it's a social experiment in freedom of speech. Everybody gets to do what they want to do anyways. The homeless are down there getting to do what they want to do. I just feel like everybody gets to do what they want to do if that's going to be the situation, he said. Godsey said he's not sure what he's going to do with the money this stream has raised, but he said at least some of it will be going to his lawyer.
Some of it's going to be going for breaking his lease and moving the fuck out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody's eventually going to work out the angle on that camera and, fuck up his apartment trying to shut that down.
Dude, it's been shot at. It's had eggs thrown at it. Yeah, the dude is just got big fucking balls, man. He's even showing his face on stream. He's not afraid. He even showed his face on the interview for Fox 7. So, and I mean, if this is a hate crime, what the fuck is, like, dude's getting fucked up on his camera, like, shooting up and shit like that? What the fuck is that? You know, all this kid has done is embarrassed the city of Austin. And now the cops are patrolling the alley constantly. A great victory for Paul. clean the alley up, man.
Hey, if it works.
This alley is now crime-free. Where 6 days ago, it was just full of drug dealers and prostitutes and people getting hit. Like, we're watching people get mugged on camera.
See, now this is how you should do security cameras, though. As opposed to just being monitored by the police or a private... No, public streams on the internet.
Yeah, I'm all for it, man. Like, yeah, this is... I know it's like very similar to the He Will Not Divide Us one, but this one's, I don't know, more interesting because you get to fuck with it more.
Yeah, probably
costs
less.
Costs money to fuck with it. But, I've been sitting here 6 days fucking straight watching this stream. There's nothing happening, but I'm stuck watching it. Because you never know what's going to happen.
Somebody needs to go out there in a Shia LaBeouf mask, go into that alley, and just start holding up signs saying he will not divide us and see who gets the joke.
Well, an hour ago, there was a man sprinkling bird seed and putting out cat food. Just to try and get some entertainment on this. They're throwing like handfuls of quarters and dimes down there just to get the people picking them up off the ground. And they paid a homeless man to put up a pinata.
Ah!
It's some fascinating shit, dude. But, yeah, interesting. Check it out. The stream is called The Window of Life.
So, and finally, I thought about putting this in Digital Dojo, but I think it's better covered here. This is from Liverpool, the Liverpool Echo.co.uk. Signs that your child is a computer hacker. Cyber criminals can be young as 8.
God. Can they be 7? So if my kid's 7, I don't have to worry about
7
it?
7 is too young for necromancy. Wait, what are we talking about? Anyways, an expert in cybersecurity has listed the signs that parents can look out for if they suspect their child is involved in cybercrime. Vince Warrington, who's helped both the government and private companies keep their data safe, is part of a new scheme launched in Merseyside educating children aged 8 to 18 about online behavior. The Youth Fed Hackers to Heroes program aims to encourage children talented at using computers into lucrative careers in cybersecurity rather than cybercrime. Well, cybercrime can be pretty lucrative too there. I mean, it's not just... Anyways, I mean, I can't complain about cybersecurity. It's worked for me, but, anyways, here are the signs to look out for, and just have fun picking these apart. And the fact is that Cycrus is saying, dude, this is an old list. Yes, it is, but this thing was published like yesterday. So, they're just replaying this old bit and trying to scare people. So it's like, your kid's opened a DOSBox. Beat him. Parents, have you ever thought about just sitting down with your children and hitting them? I mean, So here are the signs to look out for. They spend most of their free time alone with their computer. What are they sticking in the CD drive? God. This is the same kind of shit that was going around when I was in high school. It's just like, oh my God.
Oh, you want a fun thing to do after? Go to Google and type in wherever you are in the world is warming at a faster rate than the rest of the planet, right? And then just go change that name and you'll find article after article. Texas is warming faster than everywhere else. And Antarctica is warming faster than everywhere. They just write the same shit, change the headline.
Yeah.
It's the same stuff.
Let's see, number two.
That's all this is.
Yeah, of course it is. But we can have fun picking it apart. They have few real friends, but talk extensively to online friends about computers. Teachers say the child has a keen interest in computers, almost to the exclusion of all other subjects. They're alone so much it alters their sleeping habits. Yeah,
maybe there's a fucking raid.
It's called World of Warcraft, you bitch. What are you on about?
Save World of Warcraft.
Oh, don't even start on Civilization. I mean, that's like, you know, weeks of somebody's life there. I mean, then somebody says Wallaloo and their clothing changes color. I mean, it's... See, they use the language of hacking with terms such as DDoS, pronounced DDoS, DOSing, pwned, doxing, bots, botnets, cracking, hash, refers to a type of encryption rather than cannabis.
Minecraft.
Keylogger.
I just wanted hash browns.
Lols. They got lols on here.
No.
Wow. Members of the anonymous hacktivist group refer to their actions as ops. Yeah, and so do most companies that have admin teams.
Wow.
They refer to themselves and their friends as hackers or script. Okay, nobody calls themselves a script kiddie.
I'm a script kiddie. Look
That's
at me.
That's generally purring. An insult, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
It means you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Hey, my computer knows what I'm doing. That's all the fuck that matters. I hit the button that said work.
They have multiple social media profiles on one platform.
Oh, no.
They have multiple email addresses. Or they, you know, might just have a job.
Yeah.
God, I have like four email addresses at work alone. Go ahead, BSC.
And who doesn't have a junk email for the random stuff you don't want to get spammed from?
Right? They have an odd-sounding nickname. Well, that's all of us on this one here.
Nah. Perhaps are you for
Why is not much so much as odd as offensive?
Their computer has a web browser called Tor, which is used to access hacking forums on the dark web. Monitoring tools you've put on the computer might suddenly stop working. Yeah, especially if you don't, you know, pay the updates. Those things are nasty about that. What were you going to say, are you? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Nothing. I wasn't going to say anything. I'm just giggling to myself at how fucking stupid this is.
Oh, yeah. They can connect to the Wi-Fi of nearby houses, especially concerning if they have no legitimate reason to have the password. For fuck's sake. They claim to be making money from online computer games. Many hackers get started trying to break computer games into an exploit flaw of the game, and they sell these cheats online.
And esports isn't a thing nowadays. Yeah.
Back in the day, how many people did we know were actually making decent money in Second Life?
A few, but you weren't guaranteed to make money.
No, of course not.
Because there were always assholes like me and Big running around with copy bots.
Well, there were, I mean, I knew several people back in the day who would run up WoW accounts and then sell the damn account. Make a couple $100 a pop doing that shit.
Yeah. Especially if, you know, people want to buy them and they don't have the time to play.
Oh, yeah. They might know more than they should about parents and siblings not being able to resist hacking your email and social media.
They know too much about me. How dare my child know about me?
Well, the picture they have for the click art here is appropriate because they've got the keyboard from, it looks like a really old Mac or a computer that was trying to look like a Mac, maybe. Actually, I think that might be an HP keyboard. Man, the fact that I know that makes me a massive nerd. Anyways, of course, you know, they're wearing gloves while they type.
Ripped kitty.
Well, that way they can't get your prints.
Right. Your internet connection slows or goes off as their hacker rivals try to take them down.
No, it's just shit of strange
internet.
Oh,
somebody picked up the phone. It's an entire right? page of the list.
Or, you know, somebody in the house is watching Netflix. This is fucking dumb. Some circumstantial evidence suggests children with autism and Asperger's could be more vulnerable to becoming hackers.
Is this a disease you get in a car park from fucking strange computers at night?
You know, when you're on the playground and you're behind the slides and you see a strange computer laying on the ground and you pick it up and play with it, you know, it's like a crack needle, but, you know, an iPhone. I don't, that analogy broke. I don't know how to make that work.
Yeah. This is like how to tell if your kid's a Nazi. Is he into working out and reading?
Mr. Warrington said children as young as 8 have gotten involved in hacking, and most often it starts with online gaming. Vilify the games here again. Maybe a tea smoker. It's the same shit. Targets are often quite specific, such as rival clans or computer game companies that have done something they dislike. Convictions for cybercrime can make it hard to get a job involving computers in the future. About that. That's how they used to find people who could do cybersecurity. I'd like to, not so much anymore, but back in the day. By 2022, we're looking at a global shortfall of 1.8 million skilled cybersecurity workers, said Mr. Warrington. If they want a career change, cyber is the way to go. Yeah, back in the AOL days, cybering meant something else. Anyways, the average for a senior...
Something very different.
But still make a living online.
Well done, sir. Well done. The average for...
Toasty!
There it is. The average for a senior cybersecurity consultant is between 80 to 90,000 euros a year, and chief information security officer for a mid-sized business costs 120 to 140,000 a year. Some CISOs for big banks are pulling in millions of pounds because... Oh, wait, did I say euros? Yeah, this is Britain. These would be pounds, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
My bad. As American, I can't read them foreign numbers right. Pulling in millions of pounds because they're that valuable. So, you know, if I had an 8-year-old who was actually hacking and getting in beefs with other online hackers, I'd be buying that kid Raspis. I'd be getting them their own network segmented from mine. But it's like I would
Timmy,
be encouraging
you don't go to
the
school
shit
anymore.
Out of that.
Yeah, Timmy, you don't go to school anymore. There's nothing they can teach you there that you need to know. All right, how about it? Let me know when you need new hardware.
Pretty much, man. So let's do this and then wrap. All right. I've only got one thing for you tonight in Digital Dojo, but it's pretty good. Turgensek has put out a really nice guide on using Shodan. So Shodan is a search engine that is constantly scanning and cataloging the internet. So you can do things like go, okay, I know a certain version of a server is vulnerable. So I can just go search on Shodan for all the servers that they've scanned that have that pattern. And so it's like a certain telnet server is vulnerable or something. One, there shouldn't be telnet on the internet in the first place, but I digress. Like maybe, you know, that or, you know, some certain other service. And this is a pretty good, pretty extensive write-up on using the command line tool, using the website, hitting the API, and some of the other tools that touch up on Shodan. And, you know, if you're looking for a way to test things, of course, the stated use would be to search for your own servers in Shodan and see what's coming up, see if they're vulnerable. But if you're wanting to research and be able to, you know, give this to your 8-year-old kid who's learning to be a hacker so they can, you know, attack their online gaming friends. And that way they can, you know, see if the clan that they're hacking against is vulnerable. Or, you know, they can do things like, say, 20% of servers on the internet are vulnerable to whatever this is, right, if they're doing a research paper. There are legitimate uses for this, but really it's to find targets. So, but yeah, hell, if you had an 8-year-old following this, I'd be impressed. Like I said, get that kid a Raspi and, like, their own laptop and shit, right? You know, let them go nuts. So, but that's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the show. We're always, or the stream, we're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit. And in the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, Psychros. Psychros again, because he's cloning himself. Deviant. DP View and Madman. Speaking of Madman, closing thoughts.
Don't mix PM cough syrup with rye whiskey. Or do. Or do.
Keep doing that, Madman. I'll see you on this camera in this alley.
I thought rye whiskey was cough syrup. Are you just double dosing?
Two different kinds. One came from a pharmacy.
You know, I've gotten whiskey at a pharmacy before. That's, you know. Anyways, BSV, closing thoughts.
Don't download that app that Corona Chan sends you.
Nice. All right, are you close us out?
Yeah, everything feels a little shitty right now. Everything going on. Don't jump off the roof. Ride the building down with it. Still have.
All right, Slim Pickens. That's I'm gonna hit the buttons on the board now.
Yeah.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Welcome to the rice fields.
Now I'm just gonna nose down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.